Okay. Hey, everyone. This is Maddie K, and this is The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning. Snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks. We're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Man, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
To stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my biscuits?
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
He was clipping his toenails at his desk. I can't take it anymore.
Hey everyone, it's Maddie K with The Working Experience, and I'm here with a guy I haven't seen in a long time, but I've known him for a while, and his name is Christian.
How you doing, Matt? Good to be with you.
Excellent to have you. So, Christian and I used to work in the film industry together. That's where I met him when I worked as a grip, and you've been more on the electric side, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I'm in a union electrician here in New York.
So so just to give a little background, Christian is switching into the field of education, which I actually work in now as well, as my maybe 9 listeners already know. So so I guess we can talk a little bit about the whys and the wherefores of that, but as usual, I bounce some things off people to kind of get it going. So a story I've told quite a bit is a friend of mine up here named John had a coworker who is very tall. He's like 6'7", older guy. And he used to go into the break room. It was like a small room with a sink and a refrigerator and whatnot. And he would take off his shoes and socks and put his foot up on the edge of the sink and clip his toenails into the sink. So.
Did you say he cut his toenails into the sink?
Cut his toenails into the sink. And this is where people were eating.
And, yeah, I'm assuming he was approached about this, right?
Well, the delightful thing about corporate America I've learned is, first of all, that there are people like this who do stuff like that. And everybody handles everything in a very passive-aggressive way. Like, they're up here in Boston, but the manager is in the office in New York. So someone called the office in New York, and the manager down there had to call the guy to let him know that the employees were complaining about this and whatnot. So, you know, that's how they handle it. So nobody would approach the guy directly. It would be through the proper channels.
Yeah. I had a friend who was working in he works for a bank. And he was complaining about differences, right? Like, he's like, oh, Boston's more laid back. You know, I don't wear a tie. Gotta take my jacket off at work, but when we go to New York and work, you gotta wear the tie all day. You know, nobody takes their jackets off, but I've never heard differences in, you know, in New York, usually they don't cut their toenails into the sink. In New York, they go to the bathroom. That's
well,
the question too is like, who cuts their toenails at work?
Well, we talked when I've posited this story to other people, it's been like, you know, like, I don't clip my toenails or fingernails at work. Like, that just is not something I would do.
Unless you're a grip. I did see a grip once. We were shooting in, like, the Times Square area. It's probably, like, 7 years ago. And what was the guy's name? Like, Heavy G or something? his ex-con grip. Who earlier in the day, like, crept up to me while we were shooting on set and got right on my shoulder. And whispered in my ear, I sure wish they had boys like you when I was in prison.
He seriously said this to you?
He was like in prison for 10 years for involuntary manslaughter or something.
Oh my God.
And then I walked downstairs from the set and there's a dolly out on the street that they're not using. He's sitting on the dolly with Duvetine, the black cloth.
Yeah.
They use the blackout windows for movies, you know. And, is clipping his toenails onto the Duvetyn.
Ugh.
All the other grips were too afraid of him to say anything about it, but they talked about it the next day when he wasn't there.
Yeah, well, I'd have to tell our listeners that definitely working on a film set, there is a different sort of code of conduct. I mean, I found people professional for the most part, but it's different, obviously, than working in an office.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, people...
A variety of situations all the time. You know, you might be at the stage, you might be at a location. Sometimes that location might be some, like, really fancy multi-million-dollar house in Manhattan or somewhere else, you know, so...
I remember being in a house, different locations like that, but we were in an apartment one time where there was, like, literally a $250,000 vase that was, like, right in the foyer where we were loading in. And, like, they didn't want to, the house owners would refuse to move it. And I thought, well, why are you letting us shoot in here? And it was just, yeah, like, tiptoeing around that. And you would be in some bizarre places sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Like, even the stages sometimes are, you know, since it's gotten so busy in New York, you're kind of like, you know, is this, this is not really a stage. It's not really safe. Dilapidated buildings, stuff like that.
So anything is sort of passing as a stage these days, whatever they can get?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, there's a guy that buys up, just keeps buying these buildings and turning them into stages. So New York is on the verge of being like Dwayne Reed's, Chase Banks, and movie stages.
Yeah,
there
are a lot of Dwayne Reeds. Yes, I've noticed. So are you still working on sets while you're getting your master's?
Yeah, I'm taking one class right now, so I'm working rigging crew.
Okay.
Which I don't know if you want to explain that for your listeners, but shorter days generally than doing the shoot crew where you're actually doing the filming. We set up the power and the lights beforehand and then clean them up after.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually thinking about, because I did one of these podcasts with Chris Scarfile, who was my roommate and became, I think he's probably one of the premier grips, and now he's a camera operator. So he had a pretty interesting... you know, take on just sort of explaining how the business works and things like that. One thing that I found that most people find very interesting is the food situation.
The what?
The food situation.
Yeah, there's actually an Instagram called Bad Crafty. I don't know if you've seen this.
Well, no, but I mean, when I worked on Law and Order, like the food was absolutely amazing.
It was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was unbelievable.
When I worked on it, it got bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you have to compare this...
thing every day, you know what I mean? So...
Right, but you also have to compare this with the fact that, and, you know, having worked outside of the industry, then being a grip, then now not being in it anymore, there are very few jobs that serve you food.
Yeah, sure.
So when I put it in that perspective, like just the idea that you are going to get a hot breakfast and lunch is, you know, you're not going to get that being a teacher. Let me put it that way.
And snacks all day. You know.
And snacks. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I remember they would have like whatever omelets you wanted. And, you know, it was just like every day it was like eating this amazing breakfast buffet. But I will say also I did get kind of tired of it after a while.
I always felt pretty sick. I could make like a salad.
Yeah.
Like usually now I just buy my own lunch or bring something, but I could make a salad and feel terribly ill after eating catering in some places. Although some places are amazing. Commercials generally have like this unbelievable selection.
Yes.
Like quality ingredients. That's the big thing. I think they get the cheapest stuff sometimes.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, yeah, it's, you know, it, but like I say, you know, having to, being able to rely on it, at least, as, you know, in case you can't pack your own lunch or something, is a luxury that most people are not afforded.
Yeah, I think the saying is you say, oh man, they have free food on this job, and the other guy says, yeah, but you'll pay for it one way or another.
Nothing is
for in the bathroom or something. I mean, I can't think of any other job of the amount of people I know that have crapped their pants.
Really?
My one of my coworkers over the summer, we're working, and we're almost finished anyway, but he's like doing something. He runs back to the truck, gets on the truck, gets a hoodie, wraps it around his waist, takes his bag and says, I'm going home. I just crapped my pants. And you can't get mad at somebody for going home because they crapped their pants.
No,
you know?
You can't work.
You have to go home. You can't walk around with crap in your pants.
No. So you've heard this more than once?
Yeah, and then the main boss who was out scouting or something that day, I said, the next day I was like, yeah, he crapped his pants. And he's like, again? I'm like, he's done this before? He's like, yeah, he's done it like 8 times. And then the next day we go to the free breakfast and he had, what did he have? He had the grits, biscuit, you know, with the sausage gravy.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, you know, that's...
Yeah, buddy.
That might be your problem.
Yeah, you got to change it up. You know, have some fruit or, I don't know, cereal. I don't know.
Or bread or something that doesn't give you diarrhea. I don't know.
Well, one of my... I was making a list at one point of like, excuses to call in sick for work. And my favorite would just be to call up and say, I have diarrhea.
That's the best one, yeah.
Because you can really hit the word. You know, it's really... And then if you're face-to-face with someone, you say it. You just say, you know, I had diarrhea. And then you keep staring at them, waiting for their response. And usually, I find a supervisor is just going to want to get out of the conversation. So, you're pretty good.
Yeah, my friend in, just after college, I had a friend who was working to, working a year to go travel in Europe. And he was going to go to grad school. And he's the one who taught me this, I gotta say, if he's taught me anything, because he was working for this this company that he hated. He was just complaining about these people all the time, and he called up one day, and we all called out of work one day back then, and I was like, what was your excuse? I just said I was sick, and they're probably gonna give me hell about it tomorrow. And he said, well, I called up and I said, I have explosive diarrhea. And they said, okay, we'll see you tomorrow. Hopefully. Let me know if it continues.
Explosive.
I must have been like 22, but he was like, yeah, they're not going to question that.
No.
Like, if you say I have a headache, they'll be like, well, you could go to the doctors. Can you get the doctor's note? If you say I have diarrhea, there's no doctor's note for that.
No. Right? No. You just have it. That's
they don't
it.
Want photos. They don't want proof.
You know? I've always thought about standing in front of a classroom full of like 11th graders and being like, guys, I'm sorry I didn't get your essays graded. I know I said I would have them today, but I had diarrhea. And just kind of standing there, you know, let that sink in and then continue. So, you know, I'm not happy about it. It wasn't a pleasant experience, and I'm not quite over it yet, but I'm just going to...
I think they might care more about, like, administration would care more about you not grading papers, so maybe they just have to save that one for when the principal's monitoring your class.
Right, right, exactly.
Just show them what really goes on in the classroom.
Right, right. Take up about 15 minutes with it, explaining and, you know, talking about proper diet and things like that, and... Yeah.
It'd be good use of the smart board, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I recall, because I tend to recall odd things, that you used to work in a bank in Philly, is that right?
Yeah.
And if you don't mind telling the story, were you guys held up at one point?
Yeah. These guys came in. It was like, you know, what's the heat or something? I mean, not as bad as heat. but you know, a typical bank robber movie or something where these two guys came in with ski masks, down jackets, and 9mm, like the chromed out 9mm.
Oh my God.
Grabbed somebody, said open the door. I think we didn't have glass up the first time, and then they put glass up. And the guys got in the back, and they're like, open the fucking drawers, I'll blow your fucking head off. And you're like, okay. Like, I already hit the button for the cops, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, they came back with the 9mm in the back of my head, had me open the drawer, and I was just on the spot. I couldn't come up with any good jokes at the moment, you know? Like, there's nothing to really push on the spot like a 9mm.
Yeah, yeah.
You crap my pants.
Well, that's admirable. That is very admirable.
And then when they came back the next week...
Oh, my God.
The Brook truck shipment, they... I think they got like 30-some grand that time.
Jesus.
Then I was like... I had some good little jokes after that. I wish I could remember.
Jesus.
Bank robber jokes.
That is, was that like right out of college? Was that your like first job?
Yeah, I think that was. Yeah. That was a great first out of college job, you know?
Oh, my God. So that was like in downtown Philadelphia or in that area?
Yeah, it was in Rittenhouse Square, which is like a pretty fancy...
Wow.
Pretty fancy neighborhood.
Damn. What year was this?
2000... What year was that? I think it was the Janet Jackson Super Bowl year.
So like 2001, 2002, something like that?
I think before, like 2003, 2004, something like that.
Okay. Wow. That is quite a story. I don't know. I mean, you hear those stories, but you know, rarely do you meet somebody who's actually been on the other end of the gun.
Yeah, well, it really helped everybody turn against the corporate people and the managers and everybody. Like,
yeah.
They just clearly didn't care. And oddly, the manager, I'm like a conspiracy theorist guy, but the manager wasn't there either time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist.
Total racist, right? I ran into the guy like a year later in the same area, and he was like, oh, hey, man, how you doing? What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. You know, it's crazy that they got hit. It's not like we live in an N-word neighborhood.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was like, why? And that's happened to me a few times where, you know, white people have used that word or said something really racist.
Yeah.
And I always say, you know, what is it about me that makes you think I'm a racist, too? I'm just...
Yeah. Yeah, that's what always kind of offends me. I'm like, why would you think I'm all right with that?
I was okay with the use of the word and everything, but the fact that you think I'm a racist, that's what... I'm really selfish about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, don't put me in your dirty little guild or whatever it is you call it, you freak. Yeah, it's really weird how, like, people feel, you know... I guess liberated enough around other people to use that word. And that's Philadelphia. Like, that's not to stereotype, but it's not like you're in Memphis or something or Biloxi,
no,
Mississippi.
It's a city where you interact with, you know, it's a multicultural city, you know? You have it's tons of African American, you know, the African American population there must be like 40%. It's, or
yeah.
It used to be. It
yeah.
was then, I think.
Yeah.
So it's like you're not around people that have a different color skin, you know?
Well, you know, when I went to college in 1992 at Fordham, and so, you know, the bulk of people were from either the city or from Long Island, and I was real, and I'm not trying to play like Mr., you know, white guy sensitive and all that, but I was really surprised at some of like the racial attitudes people had, who were like from Brooklyn, Queens, like, they might as well have been from some small town in the Midwest, the way they talked about, like, interracial dating and stuff, which was a no-go, which was, like, no way. I was like, seriously? Like, I was really kind of taken aback at some people's attitude, just because of what you said. Like, you grow up around all these different people, you would think, you wouldn't really think much of it, but...
Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of it comes from the home or something, but, I mean, with Brooklyn, it's like, yeah, there are, like, a lot of racist people here, bad.
Yep.
Really bad racial things here. Like that thing that happened in Bensonhurst, didn't they kill a black guy just for like
Yeah, because he was there.
In an Italian neighborhood down there.
Yeah, he got stabbed to death. And you would hear, like, I remember I was working on a movie. It was me, Mike Aronson, Keith McNicholas. It was like this little short film. And we were in Brooklyn in like a very kind of Polish neighborhood. There were a lot of Polish flags. And this guy is, it's like a Saturday morning at like 10 o'clock. And these people are kind of standing around. And this guy's talking to these two other guys. And he keeps saying very loudly, he's like, yeah, it's all because of that Jew bastard Bloomberg. And he keeps saying it. And we're like looking around like, where are we? Like, this is Brooklyn. Like, what? You know?
Yeah, I mean,
it's very odd.
Like a teamster or something.
You're right. Right. But yeah, like, just because people live in New York does not necessarily mean they're these like open-minded cosmopolitan people. Like, it's like a series of small towns is how someone kind of described it to me one time. And it's like, yeah, you know, so.
You know Nate Bates, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, you should. You haven't had him on the show?
I didn't know him very well. Would he? Do you have his info?
Yeah, sure, yeah. He'd be great to talk to about. There's this one Teamster we've all worked with who's like this big Italian guy who's very racist. Like, in an odd way. Like, he'll say, what did he say? He said to me one time, he was like, you know, I went on vacation in the Dominican Republic, and it was just like, there were still these blacks all over the place. And I was like, well, it's the Dominican Republic, you know? That's,
yeah.
Black people in the Dominican Republic. That's just a fact, right?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, but they poop in the pool. You know, those people. That's what they do. I was like, yeah, I guess all black people poop in pools. Just like, and then it's like the weirdest thing, because there's like a black Teamster that he's like, loves the guy. He's like, hey, how you doing? And then it'll be like, hey, yeah, he's one of the good ones, though.
Yeah, of course.
Which is why before I was saying, like, it's weird when you grow up in a multicultural place that you're not,
more,
you can't be racist.
Yeah.
Because you have to interact with people, and it's maybe like, maybe there's too much segregation in the Nate. Like, maybe this guy's only interacted with very few black people, so he thinks that, like, that one black Teamster is
right,
just one of the good ones, and the rest are
right,
pooping in pools, I guess.
And secondly, like, or firstly, perhaps, I would really have to fact check what he's talking about with people pooping in the pools. Like, what?
I was assuming it was, like, a child that, like,
right,
like a baby with a diaper on, and the parent had them in the pool, and the diaper came off or something. And then, like, you know, 0 to 60 was like,
I go to a health club.
Stereotypes like that nobody else has heard of.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's proud that he found another one that he he was running out. I go to a health club here that is like 99% white people, and on three different occasions, at least, they've had to clear the pool because the kid had an accident in it. So if I were him, if I were a black person and I went back home and said, geez, you know, white people poop in the pool all the time. Did anybody know this? Like, good Lord. I mean, seriously, who poops in the pool?
White people just do whatever they want.
Whatever they want. They're so entitled. There's crap everywhere.
And get over it.
Everyone else deal with it.
In my parents live in this like 55 plus community.
Yeah.
And they have like this little health center with a, you know, some weights and they have a pool in there.
Someone pooped in the pool.
Yeah, my mother sends me a text one day. She's like, "Christian, you'll never believe it. Somebody pooped in the pool." And I was like, "Accidents happen."
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, you wouldn't believe it. Somebody pooped in the pool again.
Again. Oh
and
my
this
god.
Happened, like, no joke, like 6 or 7 times.
Oh, man.
And you have to, like, scan in. So, and this is over, like, 2 months. And they shut the pool down for a while. Every time they had to shut it down for, like, a couple days to clean it out. And it took them, like, 4 months to catch this person. And you have to scan in, right? So you would know the approximate time. And I think there's a camera. There's got to be a camera there somewhere. And finally, they caught the serial pooper. You know, it's not an uncommon thing, I guess.
Now, was this a I would assume it was a matter of incontinence, like it's an old person and, you know, they just lost it. But was this deliberate or something?
It seems like a serial crime.
Oh, yeah. My God. That is... Well, okay, on a related note, disturbingly enough, a friend of mine, Tom, who, not the editor here, but guy I went to college with, he works for like a big advertising firm in Manhattan. I don't know if it was the place he's at now or the place he was before, but word got around that someone was crapping on the floor in the women's bathroom. And, you know, it was reported. So we were talking about it. We were saying, well, once someone's sick, whatever, they have a bowel infection, something bad happens. Twice, you know, now when it was happening like beyond the third time, somebody was obviously disgruntled and was coming in and doing this.
That's a repeat offense.
That is a repeat offense. So then it got down to like, I mean, it's a pretty risky maneuver. Like this is a public bathroom, and to like go in there and do that, I mean, you're risking getting caught. So we weren't quite sure if she was doing it at home and bringing it in and dumping it on the floor. They eventually found out who it was, and she turned out to be...
Because it is kind of difficult to catch, because you can't put cameras in the bathroom, right?
Well, that apparently, off the record, that's what they did. They had a woman go in from HR, put a camera up, and they figured out who it was, and she was released from her job. So... on another note, getting back to the film industry, and someone I won't use his last name, but there was a guy, Paul, that I worked for on a television show, and yeah, he was a total psycho. I mean, he would get in my face and scream and curse at me and call me an idiot and tell me he was going to fire me. I was a non-union additional because, ironically, the only reason I was able to get on the show was because he was so bad, no one would work for him. So I was able to slide in. And, you know, sometimes he was all right, and then he was really, like, mercurial. Like, he was so moody and, like, just would go off for no reason. He had a really bad reputation. So my friend Chris worked for him for a number of years, and then... they had falling outs over this and that. And you know Chris. Chris is like the nicest guy ever.
Yeah, he's super mellow.
Yeah, and really good at his job. Really does not deserve to get any crap from anybody. So when this guy, Paul, found out Chris was trying to move up into being an operator, he wouldn't speak to him anymore and really treated him badly. And then... Paul had a big mishap on a TV show. A 20 by frame let go and hit the lead actress in the head and sent her to the hospital.
Yeah,
I think you heard that story.
Yeah, I know somebody was there that night. I know a few people, but
yeah,
somebody on the job that he had been on that he was fired from.
Right.
And was there that night. Yeah.
So he's made so many enemies over the years that nobody was going to stick up for him. Nobody wanted to hire him anymore and whatever. And so one guy owed him a favor. He had done a favor for the guy. So Chris gets a job as B camera operator on a TV show, and Paul shows up as his dolly grip on that show. So, which is, for our listeners, that is a big demotion. From being key grip on a major television show to being B dolly grip.
Not even a dolly grip.
And he was working for Chris. He was Chris's dolly grip.
Yeah.
So Chris sent me a text saying karma is a bitch. And I thought, that's, yes, it is. Eventually it comes back around to get you at some point.
Did he yell stuff at him? Like, I remember him. I was on that show where the 12 by fell, like the first season, and we were down in Ditmas Park, right? It's all those big Victorian houses.
Yeah.
And it took one block to use. It was supposed to be like a college, like a frat row.
Uh-huh.
Like fraternity row, whatever. And it was like a big party. They had hundreds of extras.
Right.
And we were up on the porch of one of these Victorian houses setting a bounce. And he's stapling it into the house, which is questionable
yeah.
to begin with.
Yeah.
And then with the actress standing there, they were about to roll, and I was setting the light there. And he starts shooting the staples from the staple gun out at the guys working for him. Where's the tape? I need diffusion over here. If I don't get diffusion in 30 seconds, I'm going to shoot you in the eye. It's, you know, 16 hours of that. And the gaffer on that job was pretty much as bad. And I worked for that guy a lot. He would say stuff like, he had this a deeper voice, but when he would get excited, it would go up like 8 octaves. So he'd say, I told you to pan the light. Pan the light. Did you take your retard pills today? Did you take retard pills today? See if they have retard pills and take the whole bottle. And then, yeah. You know, 15 hours into the day, he said, you just get on the walkie and say, you guys are an embarrassment. You look like total assholes. You guys are a complete embarrassment. You've embarrassed me. You've embarrassed your union. You've embarrassed this entire industry. It's like, doing what? Like, what were we doing?
I love that broad hyperbole. Like, you've embarrassed the entire industry. The entire industry doesn't care, like, what you're doing on a particular television show, mate, you know?
No, I mean, they care about money and ratings, right? I mean,
yeah, you've embarrassed.
As long as you're not like blowing money or losing money for a network or a studio.
Paul used to say things along. I've heard of these two guys working together, and I believe they almost came to blows one time. If it's the same guy, I'm thinking of the gaffer. Like they were like toe to toe, chest to chest, and Paul did that with some gaffer, and my friend Chris, our friend Chris, was there for that. And said it was really, like, really embarrassing. It was just like, you know, two men in their mid-50s about to throw down. But Paul used to...
Also happened that gaffer's best boy at one point. And I don't know, everybody seemed to go from working for that gaffer to, like, one of the nicest gaffers, you know? Like, I went to work for a guy that was, like, the best guy. Really, really great guy. Mm. And his best boy went to work for this guy who's like, his whole personality is like, Steve, I don't know if you know him. He would say like, hey, Christian, I see you out there by the 18K. If you wouldn't mind, could you please pan it a little bit to the right?
That's nice.
Yeah, man. Like, yeah. Sure.
Sure, I'm standing here. Yeah.
It's like your job is acting like it's like you're doing them a favor or something, you know. But after coming from, you know, it's a pretty big shock in the system to go from, I'm going to shoot you in the eye, embarrassment to like, hey, could you please do your job?
You should have walked up to him after and said, hey, listen, I don't appreciate being spoken to like that. And I'm going to go take it up with human resources because this isn't going to go on. So,
like the guy from So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Right.
The cop. Chief, could you talk to me more like the bosses on the TV shows talk to? Like, you know, throw some racial slurs in there.
Well, there is a very, like... I remember working on sets where most people were very professional, you know, kind of toned down on the language, you know, and we're just good. I mean, they were just professional people and treated the job that way. And I do remember Paul, though. He did have some funny lines. We'd be like, you know, Paul, we put up that 12 by over... wherever, and he would get on the walkie and go, "Alert the news media." Just like, okay, that's pretty funny. Or like he'd ask for something, he'd be like, "Let me get a flag and a stand over here, blah 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 blah," and there'd just be silence, and he would go, "Any verbal response would be appreciated." So, you know, he had his moments, but it was just, it's really hard to work for someone who's like just moody and unpredictable. And although having to work for people who kind of won't tell you the straight deal to your face also has its issues. You know, you're never, some people you're never quite sure, like, where you stand with them, and they kind of like it that way, so it's like, you know.
Who was his best book? I heard a story. I know his, the guy who used to be his best boy, it was a guy named John, short Italian guy.
The guy I knew about was really friendly guy. The guy I knew about was, the one guy was named Jasper. He was on Law and Order, and then there was Charlie, who was his best boy for a long time, who apparently is a sweetheart. He's a really, really nice guy.
Yeah, this one guy, he's this guy who, like, John, who loves cooking. He's from Brooklyn, Italian guy, you know, with the chain and everything.
Yeah.
In his 50s now, but he was his best boy for a while, and he loves cooking on set. So wherever he goes, he'll make sauce with, he'll go through the whole thing with you, like, wow. Yeah, you know, the olive oil, but I don't use 100% olive oil because it burns, so I put in like 40% canola oil. You know, it's like Goodfellas or something. And he was apparently on a set when he was the best boy, and things were going crazy on set, and he had set up a little cardboard box hut with like a hot plate on it.
Yeah.
And he's making pasta for the crew.
Wow.
As if he's crafty or something, right? And he's making the sauce, and Paul is like, "John, get in here. I need you. It's crazy." And people are running around. It's crazy. They're rushing to get this day. And he's like, "John, where are you?" And John's not answering. He's like, "Hey, Paul, are you calling me?" He's like, "Yeah, John, I need you. Get in here right now." And he's like, "I can't leave. I'll burn the sauce." To which I'm sure his, Paul's head exploded, I'm sure, over that.
Yeah, he was really, it was not easy working for him. Although, then I'll say, like, any other job I've done, like, everybody's so nice and everything. I'm like, I mean, there's nothing you can really throw at me that's going to be worse than that. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think my first jobs in the business, my first, like, union jobs, working for really angry, verbally abusive people, built up a thick skin that I think you need in the business. Because then everything else, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody yells at you once, it's like, all right, whatever. I've gotten worse than that.
Yeah, you just let it roll off your back. Yeah. So for our listeners, just sort of explain like what a gaffer is, what a best boy is, and kind of where you fit into that crowd.
Gaffer is the chief lighting technician. So he's the guy that runs the lighting crew, who is also the crew that runs all the electricity on the set. So those of us who are electricians will have to run, you know, electricians operate lamps also, and often run power to whatever, you know. So we'll set up power in for the hair and makeup and all that. The best boy is the guy that does the paperwork for the gaffer, and he's the assistant gaffer, basically. I never get a straight answer on why it's called the best boy.
I've never gotten, no. I know gaffer comes from the poles they used to use in England.
Right, the lamplighters, right?
The lamplighters, yeah. Yeah. So, now, you guys also, I mean, the gaffer is responsible for maybe not the look of the movie. I mean, it's more the DP, but, or director of photography. But the gaffer will work closely with the director of photography to get the lighting correct.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, it depends, you know. Different DPs work different ways. I think in different countries it's skewed as well, where the DP really only focuses on the lighting. I think in the UK, it's the DP focuses on the lighting and the the cameraman really sets the shots up more.
Oh.
In my experiences, it varies. I've been on jobs where the DP doesn't care and just lets trust the gaffer. They have a long relationship. They know that the gaffer knows what he wants, so he'll set it up in a certain way. Largely, at least as far as roughing in everything and just getting the lights up, and then the DP may come in and tweak it a little bit, you know?
Right. So the gaffer will know, like, if it's a night exterior and they're on a city street, like, you know, an experienced gaffer can start okay, we're going to need these types of lights. Yeah. This is probably what we're going to need.
We'll go to the best boy and say, we need a 20K. We'll go to the key grip and say, we need to order a lift to put the light on, to get it really high, you know. And just all the equipment needed. If there's additional equipment needed from the rental house, we'll tell the best boy will call the rental house and put the order in, and then a couple of guys will go pick it up, usually Teamsters.
So what, when someone says, I have to go up in the bucket, can you explain to our listeners what that is?
Are you just trying to get me to tell more poop stories? Or?
Well, you know what I found? Whenever I didn't work on a lot of huge jobs. I was only in the industry for about 5 years. So Law and Order was about the biggest thing. I day played on some bigger stuff. But on the low budget, you know, indies that we all did, it was always like, okay, what's the bathroom situation? Because God forbid it was like an apartment with one bathroom in it. And then you were just sunk. You were like, oh, God. Because, you know, it was always like next to hair, makeup, wardrobe, where you're like, oh, Jesus, you know, like, like, why are you doing this to me, you know? Or God forbid it was like a porta potty. If we were out in the woods, you'd be like, holy Jesus. Like, it was just, it's something I always kept in mind. If we were shooting in a school or a hospital, you were golden. It was great. But so, yeah, so going up in the bucket, if you could explain to our listeners.
Yeah, so sometimes you need to get a light really high, like, I don't know, up to 100 feet in the air on a city street.
Now, some big, like, I remember I was on one. There was, like, 10 lifts with, like, 20Ks, which are just huge lights.
Yeah, they're, like, 80-pound lights.
Yeah. And so they send those up in the lifts.
Yeah, so a guy has to go up there and sit up there with the light to focus it. Because once you're up 100 feet, this thing has, you know, it's a big arm. They use them for construction.
Yeah.
And you there's no way to get down, so you have to sit up there.
So,
which is kind of nice sometimes, you know, in the summer.
Yeah.
You go up a walk and you're up and looking over the city with a great view. And
yeah. But sometimes.
Sometimes you get to do it in the winter too, you know, so.
So that's you will literally have to get into this lift, the bucket, as they call it, and you just go up with the light, and you're up there for like 6 hours at a stretch, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
And you've done that?
I've done that a lot, yeah.
Wow. So what do you do while you're up there?
Read books. I don't know. The smartphones came along
shortly
into my career, so at first it was like, if you didn't bring a bulk, you were just staring, you know? Staring.
See, for me,
going to dark places.
That's the thing. My mind would start feeding upon it. I'd really start conjuring up my list of grudges, like people I really want to pound their face in. And I would really start getting mad. And then it'd probably segue into anxiety and then depression, and then probably start the cycle all over again.
Right. And the guy would be in the ground. It would be Paul, right? Because it would be the guy on the ground yelling at you.
Yeah, or somebody from 25 years ago, whatever. You know, yeah, that they'd probably find me curled up in a ball in one end of the lift. So
yeah, it's you know, you got to bring a bottle up there too. You know, this is all going to be about bathroom stuff my entire appearance on your podcast, but yeah, you gotta bring a bottle up there too, because you're up there for 6 hours and
you gotta
take water and food up with you, but
yeah,
so you don't dehydrate, but yeah, you gotta pee in a bottle up there, and if you I've heard other stories too about the number two.
The dreaded number two. Yeah. And you can't pee over the side of the lift, obviously.
Oh, it's been done. Yeah,
well,
it's been done.
I'm sure it's been done, but it's not advisable.
No. Especially if you're like on a soft light directly over the set.
And just cutting loose up there.
And then you wind up seeing stuff into people's windows and you can't help because you're static there. So you see everything that goes on inside people's apartments in New York City.
Wow.
All kinds of sexual acts and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's always upsides to anything. I remember riding home one night. I was working on a job with this woman named Nara, and we were down in this like corporate office shooting these industrials. I mean, we really didn't do much at all. We just set up the camera, set up a few lights, got paid a very nice amount of money, and she was giving me a ride home. She lived in Brooklyn. It was like 10 degrees out. It was so cold. And we drove by, I think it was Will Smith horror. He's the last guy.
Legend, yeah. That was like one of the first jobs I worked on.
Yeah, and we saw like four lifts up. And Nara was like, you know, there's a guy in each of those lifts. I was like, oh my God. Like, that would have just been
miserable. Yeah, I've been the guy in that lift.
Really? When it's that cold?
Yeah, it's... You bring a heating blanket, like a heating pad.
Yeah.
One of those plug-in heaters, one of those 110 heaters.
Yeah.
A light to put on yourself, you know, like a 2,000-watt light.
Yeah.
And then you try to, like, tent out the bucket. But a lot of guys don't like doing that because you put a tarp around the bucket and you're just making yourself a big sail.
Oh.
Which you don't want that either, you know?
No, you'd rather not have it tip over. Yeah.
rather not.
Rather not. All right, we're at about minute 49 here, so I'm going to sign off. I mean, I know we have more places we could go with this. So this has been another experience, definitely. Another episode of the Working Experience. And thanks a lot, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me.
See you next time.